My name is Dr. Michael J. Staggs. I currently work for Guidance Software, the makers of NCASE, a computer forensics program. I've been asked to do an introduction to computer forensics. Computer forensics has only been around for a handful of years. It is considered a black art by most people today. Almost everyone in network security is familiar with protocol analysis. They're familiar with firewalls, intrusion detection systems, lately intrusion protection systems or prevention systems, and those technologies have been around for quite a while, and there are many people who are familiar with them. Only in the past 4 to 7 years has computer forensics really become something that is more widely known, as opposed to a black art that people practice in their basements or the bottom of the National Security Agency or perhaps in some dark room in the basement of the FBI headquarters. There are a number of common open source tools, and there are a few commercially available tools that allow people to do computer forensics. So now it's becoming more of a known art as opposed to a black art. In concert with that, the need for forensics has become more pronounced. There's been, in the United States recently, there's been a large number of corporate scandals where billions of dollars have been wasted or misappropriated by chief executives. And since we all know recently that most data is stored in an electronic format, in order to find out who's been stealing what from whom, you have to be able to deeply analyze a computer evidence trail. You add to that the unfortunate but very common issue of pornography in the workplace, the less common but much more unfortunate issue of child pornography and harm to our children, and the need for computer forensics as a known science has become much larger. In the old days, computer forensics, and when I say old days, I'm thinking about 5 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, it was done by experts and black magicians who would bring their CDs and their DOS and Linux boot floppy disks and open up the hard drive and actually take it out of the machine and investigate it on a one-by-one basis. One piece of media, one operating system, one investigation at a time. And while this was satisfactory in the old days, now a lot of money is tied up with uptime. And we've consistently seen that in talking with enterprise managers, the IT specialist, the web farm servant, the ladies and gentlemen who keep up all the e-commerce. The last thing in the world they want to do is take their Exchange server down or take their Bind server down, take their file and print servers down so some guy with a gun and a badge on his hip can take it down to that basement and operate it on it for 2 weeks, 5 weeks, 7 weeks, sometimes months. Businesses cannot afford that. Neither can the government now, especially with the latest interest in terrorism and that propagating around the globe. We need instant response. We need instant response while the gear is still up and running. So computer forensics is now moving more from the stone knives and bearskins age of the individual tool to a network-enabled forensics. Now, when you say forensics, what do you mean by forensics? Well, I prefer to think of forensics as a goal, and the goal being that you must be prepared to present any evidence or findings in a manner that can both be understood by our legal system and legal systems throughout the world, but also understood by the common people who will interpret this data. For example, if it's a wrongful termination lawsuit or a virus writer is on trial and he or she insists that it's done by the jury system, The people that will make the decision on guilt or innocence based upon your evidence are grandma and grandpa in the jury. And they don't know from computers. They don't know Mac OSs. They don't know BSD. They don't know VPNs or encryptions or checksums. All the buzzwords that we take for granted. Grandma and grandpa don't know that. So the goal of forensics is not only to preserve the evidence in a sound manner, but also to be able to present it to the people who make the decision on whether that evidence actually is sound. So we have an issue. Not only do we have the issue of uptime versus forensic analysis, now we have the issue of explaining something very difficult and technical to the lay person. So that adds an additional layer of complexity. Okay, enough essentially high-level talk. Let's talk about the mechanics of forensics. It's easiest to think about forensics if you think about a crime or you think of it in the context of a crime. Let us say that you're investigating a handgun shooting and there's a body on the floor and right next to it is this handgun. Does the officer walk up to the handgun, pick it up, work the action a couple of times? Oh, this is really a sweet piece. I'm going to have to buy me one. No, that doesn't happen. But what happens in the computer world when a person that is highly qualified and trained in the network is faced with an incident? What do they do? The first thing they do is they log on to the box in question, they open Explorer, or they list processes, or they copy files off to another drive. It is the exact same thing as picking up that handgun. You're putting your fingerprints on the crime scene. So if you think of forensics in the context of a crime scene, you're much more likely to behave in a manner that's consistent with best practices for forensics. Instead of immediately logging on to the computer, you take steps to preserve the evidence from contamination by logging on. That's where network forensics becomes imperative. You can now, using modern technology, log on to that device in a non-interactive manner, thus preserving the integrity of the evidence which will lead you to the perpetrator of the crime. Additionally, you have to be able to preserve the evidence. And once again, in the old days, we used common tools like DD in order to make a direct bitstream image of the drive. There is an issue with that, however, in that you cannot non-repudiate the data, or perhaps that was the wrong word, you cannot verify the integrity of the data. If someone later on grabs a hold of that DD image and uses a hex editor to edit the individual bit stream of that drive, now the evidence has been contaminated, yet no one can tell if indeed that is original evidence. So proper forensic procedure not only allows for typical chain of custody, like the handgun in our crime example, but you also have to do something in order to verify the integrity. Commonly that's done with some type of a hashing algorithm. The most common is the MD5 algorithm, where you will take the bitstream image and run it through an algorithm, and then at the very end of that evidence file, append the results of that hash. Now, perhaps not everyone understands what a hash is, and it might behoove us to go over that. A hash is such that any individual bit of the original media being changed will change at least half of the small number of which the hash consists. Usually hashes are 32-bit, 64-bit, and lately 128-bit is most common. The bottom line of this is such that if anyone changes the evidence after it has been gathered, if it has a hash appended to it, the changes are immediately apparent. And in the court system that we work with today, you commonly have to surrender a copy of your data for your evidence to opposing counsel. And opposing counsel is a huge headache. Opposing counsel in any kind of a forensic or court case will do everything they can to make it look like the investigator was incompetent, the technology is faulty, the integrity of everyone in the chain of custody will be impeached. Face it, it is the job of opposing counsel to make law enforcement or corporate security look like fools. And you have to be prepared for that. And finally, what I'd like to do is I'd like to recommend that prior to having to run around after an incident in a panic mode, I highly recommend that you prepare for an incident prior to by establishing a procedure, a step-by-step checklist or methodology guideline that allows you under conditions of panic and great stress to follow a known good procedure that you have tested before. And just like the Olympics or sports or the military, drill, drill, drill. Go through a simulated incident. Actually follow the steps in your procedure. Do your drive-in image. Do your hashing. Do your notification list of local law enforcement or your own corporate security. Follow the procedure to make sure all of your numbers are updated. All of your contacts are correct. Someone might have moved or changed jobs. Your local special agent could be in another city or even another country. Only by drilling every step of your forensics process will you find out whether these things are accurate or not. Once again, my name is Dr. Michael J. Staggs, and I am available for further consultation.
This was a HelpNet Security Learning Session. Visit us at www.net-security.org.